workshop. Today is Tuesday, May 10th. We are in Volusia County Schools. If you all please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
United States of America, and Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. And so I'd like to start off by introducing my colleagues that are up here to dais with me. First, we'll start to the left. We have Mr. Persis, representative for District 4. Next to Mr. Persis, we have Mrs. Linda Cuthbert, representative for District 3. Next to Ms. Cuthbert, we have Mr. Ted Dorn, our board attorney. Coming over to the right, we have Ms. Erin Lieben, our amazing agency clerk. Next to Ms. Lieben, we have Mrs. Anita Burnett, District 2 representative. Next to Ms. Burnett, we have Mrs. Jamie Haynes, Vice Chairwoman, representing District 1. Next to Ms. Haynes, we have Mrs. Rachel Hazel, Superintendent. And my name is Ruben Colon, and I have the distinct honor of serving as the chair this year. We have three very exciting items on the agenda, and so we will start with 2.01. Ms. Superintendent?
Yes, our first item up is the Turi T. Small Elementary Design Update, and I see that Mr. Grube and Mr. Hall and Mr. Tracy are already joining us at the dais.
Welcome.
Mr. Tracy?
Oh, I missed one. Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, you are correct. A good afternoon, Chairman Colon, Madam Superintendent, school board members. Thank you for having us here. We're excited to bring this update to you today. This project has been in the works for some time. We've been having a tremendous amount of interesting and a conversation with stakeholders and with the community, and we believe we're bringing a design that's going to unify that district as we had talked about, and it's going to be just a tremendous and exciting opportunity to unite that community and with an educational facility like this. As you mentioned, I have Sean Tracy and Pete Hall from Little Architects. Also behind me is Jeff Tucker and Robert Hayes from Gil Bain. They're our construction manager, and they've been working alongside us as we've been going through design. So we've completed design, what we refer to as design development in that phase of the process, getting into construction documents. We had a very exciting meeting yesterday at the school with the principal and with some select representatives from the school there, people that we had met with early on doing a lot of the brainstorming and visioning for the project, bringing them up to speed on the design, and they're very excited. There was just a lot of energy there, and it was well received. So I'd like to turn it over to Sean and Pete, and they'll run through the design update, and then we'll talk about the overall project in terms of budget and schedule.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Linda, it's been a long time. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you too, sir. Thank you.
So we had, as Steve mentioned, we had a very exciting meeting, but we've had several meetings with the school, and it started out with a visioning session that really identified what the drivers were going to be for this school. And we met not only with the school, but also with the community itself. So as a result of that, the design drivers, and I'm not going to read this to you, don't worry, but the design drivers were kind of developed longhand, you know, everything that we kind of went through. And then we distilled it down into 7 basic points that we were really kind of focused on. The first one, because again, it had to do with this the community being involved in this meeting itself. There was a desire for a strong sense of community within the school. And then, in addition to that, having a 21st century, a fully immersed learning environment that allowed students to have self-directed learning as well as to have standard sit and get kind of learning, more lecture based, but also provide them with the opportunity to present themselves. And a lot of times we'll talk about that, but we won't really provide the atmosphere to be able to do it. And we achieve that with this design. The third item was really kind of focused on by the district, and that is to have a very highly efficient building from the standpoint of its energy use, coming out with a desire to have a 25 EUI. And EUI is essentially what's called an energy use intensity, and it's kind of like your golf score. Unlike mine, it's like your golf score. The lower, the better. So this is being a 25 versus the state standard or Osceola County standard of the high 50s, low 60s is a pretty significant change. Student health and well-being is really kind of tied to that in the way the mechanical system is designed, but also we're post-COVID, so that became an important discussion as we were designing the facility as well. A welcoming and inclusive environment. We know that this is a very poor community, and so having a place that they can feel welcome, feel safe, and was something that we wanted to make sure was incorporated and that the school did as well. Flexibility and adaptability. We don't know what education is going to provide 20 years from now. So providing those spaces, both the larger spaces and the smaller spaces, but having that flexibility to adapt to future learning environments was something that the school felt was critical and contributed to that also that immersive learning environment. And finally, color and energetic, wanting to instill a sense of excitement for the students and for the staff itself. So that kind of comes to a concept that we'll share the beginnings of, as well as just some overall pictures. And exciting enough, if we have the time, we will definitely show a video of actually walking up to and through the school. And right now, I'm going to turn it over to our senior designer, instrumental for really creating a lot of this, and that's Pete Hall. He'll take you through the building itself.
Thank you, Sean. All right. So, start with the concept. So, this is a STEM-oriented school. It's something that was given to us as direction early on, and something that, as you get into it, what is the process of science and discovery? So, really, us as a design team, we start to go on that journey and start to think about what it means to be connected to place, but also connected to this idea of discovery. So being on the coast, being close to the Space Coast, it, needless to say, what role do space, the sun, the moon, and other things, what sort of role do they have on the place where we live? So the tidal range and things like that, the ocean, the connectivity to place, became a part of something that allowed us to kind of judge a lot of our design decisions moving forward. So you'll start to see that on a small scale, you start to see on a slightly bigger, and then also it will start to inform us as we go forward into sort of getting into the core identity of the school with the actual students and the faculty's input. As I said, that from the smaller scale, we will start to see the color, the tones, the kind of the influence that we're receiving from that kind of process of discovery that we went on. You'll start to see on the finishes, and you'll see that represented in a lot of the renderings and the video that we'll show. So this is where we're at. So this is a view that nobody's going to see unless you're flying in a drone or you're a bird. But either way, it's a good way to kind of orient us at the beginning. So you'll see that there's a two-story portion at the north end of the site here, and I'll show you the site plan in a second. You've got your cover play back here with a PE office and storage. And then you have the admin space, the basically a combination of media, multi-purpose and music, and then the kitchen and service over on the core here. In the middle is what we're calling the kind of the heart of the school. It's the community aspect. So when you bring in the community, whether it's the students themselves or the community at large, there is a space that's kind of dedicated to them in some way, form or fashion. The other aspect to this is trying to create that welcoming and safe environment, but do it passively. So having the building raised by a couple of feet not only helps us with our water table issues, but also kind of creates that really nice welcome environment that they could use on the day-to-day, they could use after hours, but it's just really kind of that space that symbolizes what the school is about. So the site plan here, if you're familiar with the site, the existing school is down here. So South Street is running this way. If you're familiar with this part of Daytona, everything is at a 25-degree axis relative to north. That's why ultimately the site is shown this way. As part of the high-performance design, we want to try and orient our building true east-west as best we can. And that is for learning, and it's also for energy use. So we'll get into that a little bit more. But ultimately, the way that the site works and the way the building is oriented is essentially a product of kind of high-performance and a learning environment. As you come in from Keech, again, if you're familiar, this will be your parent drop-off, and then we'll drop off to the central location here. If you're coming in from the bus from the South Street, then ultimately you have a kind of a core drop-off area. So all students, doesn't matter how they come in, whether it's by parents, by pedestrian, or by bus, you end up entering on the axis here. And again, we'll get into the plan and zoom in a little bit, but essentially your main entry to the school is right here. Play fields at the back, again, cover play. The service aspect is down here. You've got your service court here. And from a security standpoint, again, we want to try and create a passive environment, but also multi-layers of security. So you'll have a perimeter fence that essentially wraps the parking in the school, and there'll be a gate, one point of access as you come in, which will be open during the day, and there'll be a controlled access point down here for the buses. Once you get into the school, there'll be another perimeter fence that basically utilizes the building as well as some additional fencing. That means when the kids are out to play or they're out for learning, then they are contained in an area and they don't have to interact with that parking area. So the first floor plan, appreciate this a little small. You're not going to be able to read anything here, but I'll try and orient you the best I can. So this is the welcoming area, the plaza. The main entry is through here. So your admin is right up front. So it's right center in the campus. You can see everything. So we talk about eyes on the street and security. Having the transparency and the ability to see anything approaching is paramount. As you enter into the space, it was something that we heard right at the beginning about the kids in this neighborhood don't experience space like I think a lot of us end up doing. The idea about walking into a large space is just something they don't get to see. So right in the media as you walk in is this sort of huge double height volume community space, the core of the school and where the identity and the concept kind of starts to manifest in its strongest form. Media is right here that actually leaks out. So there's an upper partition here. So ultimately media is a sort of dedicated space here when it needs to be. There's a skills lab that can also be used after hours from a separate entry point, but that's part of the learning environment for media. And then it can also leak out into a reading space out the front here as well. So kids just have the ability to kind of spread out and do what they need to do. Then you've got the music space, the multi-purpose, which again, partition closes off from a dining area. So essentially, these three spaces can act as one, or they can be closed off for whatever needs, whether it's acoustic needs, visual privacy, whatever it might be. Yes. Yeah, so one of the other aspects of just making sure we had the flexibility and adaptability to shut off the multi-purpose space if they needed to shut it off from the dining. So you can always control and regulate how people use the space and the spaces that are off there. In the core area here, you've got your art and the STEM space. So again, that leaks out into the mixer if you need it. And then really, these are your schoolhouses, the two-story component. And we'll look at that very briefly here. You've got your seven classroom boxes. Those classrooms flex out into another, what we call a sort of a sub-community within the neighborhood. So essentially, you've got a flexible learning environment now here that adds to the additional, more of the ability for teachers to kind of learn and teach in different ways. Then you've got the ESC here. You've got a skills lab that's stacked on the second floor. And then really, your typical neighborhoods are kind of reflective of those. Yeah, we'll just pause here for a second. When we talk about the community in this sort of this open plaza space, the mixer is a part of that space. So having the connectivity through here and then out into the east side and having a outdoor dining, outdoor courtyard, wherever it needs to be. So learning always has the ability to stretch out into the outside. The second floor simply is stacked on this side. So again, you've got your four stairwells. The two in the middle here are kind of more of a wellness stair. So again, encouraging activity, encouraging kids to use them. They'll be interactive in some ways, graphic, whatever it might be, but just really encouraging kids to get up and move. In the second floor, the only difference being would be this would be fifth grade potentially. You have a flex space out here that essentially you've got guidance offices that can kind of leak out into that space. You've got impart spaces, which are basically a tiered seating, which you see in the neighborhoods as well. It's all about flexible learning environments. So whether it means day one, we use it like utilizing this for the sort of the community aspect of the second floor, or it's simply in the future we need to accommodate more classrooms. So essentially that's what that flexible space is doing for us. And then the rest is part of that one story volume.
Before we leave the floor plan, we had started from the exterior, talking about layers of security. Within the interior, there are additional layers of security. If there, God forbid, is ever an active assailant that enters the building, there is going to be the ability for each of the schoolhouses and each of the floors of the schoolhouses to lock off, so that in each case, those children are able to shelter in place within the schoolhouse and then shelter in place inside the classroom itself. So again, we've got layers upon layers of security as it's necessary while maintaining, and you'll see in the pictures, a lot of visibility for supervision inside the classroom schoolhouse to be able to provide that with the security that you've also got the safety aspect of it addressed as well.
So,
Ms. Haynes has a question. Do you mind if we should go ahead and take that question?
On that slide that you were just on.
Yep.
So this is the upstairs, and so it's the intermediate classrooms. So if I'm looking at that first piece on the left-hand side,
yep,
where I see six classrooms, you know, on one side, and then on the other side there's a seventh intermediate classroom turned at a different angle. But it says there's two flex spaces here. So my question is, are those flex spaces where the teacher themselves has to take the students out there, or can they be seen from the classroom? Because that's been one of my things. I have nothing against flex spaces, but you can't send elementary kids out alone.
Yeah, that was what I was referring to in when I was talking about the layers of security. Those flex spaces, from the standpoint of how the teacher ends up using them, you know, and how much they want to push the 21st century learning and immersive learning, obviously that's up administratively. But from the standpoint of supervision, and you'll see it when we get into the video and when we get into the images, there's a lot of glazing between those spaces, so that there's constant supervision from the standpoint of teachers looking out into those flex spaces.
I see that on that same part, on anchoring on the other corner, it says ESE part-time. So is that just a large classroom for, like, the ESE resource teachers?
It would be the ESE, but based on what we understand, each of the schools is provided. They're provided an ESE classroom for full-time and an ESE classroom for part-time. So yeah, those would be for those students. Again, it's as integrated as we can make it within the school itself, rather than segregating them into a separate area.
Thank you. Okay.
So obviously we want to put ourselves back into a kid's shoes. So we're 6-7 years old, and what it means to kind of arrive at this campus. So we can show it in some renderings that we have, and then we have a video that we can play at the end. So first of all, we'll kind of walk through maybe what that typical day in the life is. So ultimately, you'd get dropped off at a central location. So whether, again, parent or bus, or you're walking or bike, you're taking the same entry into the school. So this is your kind of main access point. And then we'll have a little view there. Then obviously you get into that mixer space and we'll experience what that feels like. And then we'll get into the media and then move over into the classrooms as well. So as you arrive, the canopies at the moment are hidden just for clarity, but we'll see those on the video. But ultimately you're presented by kind of this warm and welcoming environment. So first of all, you're up the steps or up the ramp, sort of thinking more universally about how people interact with the site. But the colors and this sort of this idea about tidal range and some other things are starting to kind of appear and then become more resolved as we get into the building. that first space as you walk in that we call the mixer. So this is where learning is expanding out into the media space. You've got dining at the back, but really dining could be in the multi-purpose space, and they can kind of fluctuate depending on the needs of the school. We have this dividing wall here that's partly for that concept and identity, but also to help navigate kids that are walking through the space and kind of keep somewhat of a visual and acoustic privacy from anything that's happening out here. So just providing that separation.
Real quickly, too, as we're looking at these spaces, this mixer space is a large space intended for community use. One of the important things as we go through this is we understand that it's not additional space. It's space that has been identified and allocated per state requirements for educational facilities as the media center, as cafeteria. It's just that the way we've looked at it is providing, again, that flexibility and adaptability to be able to use it for multiple purposes as opposed to, okay, this is just media center. This is just cafeteria. It's how else can that be used for the community itself? So just an important distinction, because when you look at this, I go, wow, that's a lot of extra space. But it's not. When we cordoned it off, it was all allocated.
The other aspect to this is making sure the second floor, the community up there, also is interacting on a daily basis as well with the second floor. So lots of transparency looking down. So you're really kind of thinking about this space as a two-story volume, but we're closing it off. If it turns at the weekend, it's a science fair, whatever it might be, like you can move things around and essentially the space becomes what it needs to be for the community or for the school at large anyway. So ultimately things open up so the tables can come out, you can get people through the middle. So it just provides them with the flexibility for this space to be whatever they need to be day one and then in the future as well. The media space is, as we talked about, again, designed to be flexible. So the spaces that this is your kind of central media center, but there is space into the mix that they can bleed out into, and then the skills lab that is adjacent there as well for teaching. So this could be open, like we're showing it, with sort of small reading areas at the glass at the perimeter here, or we can move the bookshelves and the book stacks into the middle. They're designed to be movable. So the idea, again, is everything is flexible, so the teacher in the school can move in and basically adjust the space as needed, and obviously future needs as well accounted for. When we get into that classroom, so we talk about transparency. So this is one of the flex spaces out here. So you've got your transparency straight into the room there. So you've got a few kids in there presenting or collaborating, whatever they need to do. You can have a group of kids out here. Then ultimately, you have the flexibility into the classrooms. So at any given time, you have maximum visibility on spaces like this and as it relates to the classroom as well. Lots of daylight coming in. Obviously, the classroom is oriented, that we talked about at the beginning, to maximize the amount of light that we bring in, which helps reduce our energy loads, the amount of fixtures that we need, and so forth. And ultimately what that does for us is it creates a learning environment that is open, it's bright, it's filled with natural light. These kids would never have a space like this in terms of the amount of good quality light that we have. It's not just about bringing sunlight in, we have to control it. So the north is the best way we can do that.
The other thing that's interesting is because they're north-facing, because there's a lot of light, what you're seeing are five lights, essentially, in that classroom. There are five LED fixtures. Typically, we would see nine. So you're reducing that number by just about half of the fixtures and the loads that are required because of the natural light that comes in.
Part of the meeting we had yesterday with the school was to finalize the direction that we received at the beginning in regards to co-teaching. So there's two classrooms per wing that basically have an operable partition in between the two. And so the idea that you can open that up and do direct co-teaching, or simply we can kind of move in between classrooms with a swing door, and that's the same with all classrooms, to be fair. But the idea that you could create one large space if you needed it to be that way. So again, giving the school the flexibility to evolve. We're obviously hiring a lot more teachers here. We're doubling the capacity of the existing school. So we're going to bring a lot of fresh ideas in. And so trying to create the environment that helps us to evolve with the faculty, with the students themselves.
So, do we want to do the video first?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. Stephanie? Okay.
You got it?
This is even better than the pictures.
Yeah. There's no sound, though. We had a chance to put a bit of a song
Yeah.
So I can Pete's talk if you want. So here's your drop-off canopy as you enter. Sort of thinking about that plaza, what it could be on a day-to-day, events. Again, that passive level of security. Your main entry point as you walk in. Immediately as you walk in, you've got your control point, so nobody can kind of come through this door without a badge access or being buzzed in. Same with this door here. You've got your clinic right immediately to the right there, which is accessible by all the students direct from the school. And then you walk into the mixer space. At the moment, we just have it set up as a maybe a kind of a typical learning day. The wall as you walk in is that it's celebrating the student's voice. On one side, it's a big picture about concept and then welcoming into the school. And on the other side, it's more about getting to know the history. And we're not showing anything yet because we don't have the input from the school. We start the conversation yesterday, but ultimately it's about their history, their story that they want to tell. Yeah. Going back into the mixer space here. So we're getting light in from the both sides of the space. It's a long space, but we're diffusing the light with a fiberglass sandwich panel, and that brings in loads of great light and just fills the space. Looking back into the media, and again with the oval partition that is open at this point, but it could just be pocketed back into this area here. Do a little walk into the media. Obviously, we're not showing too many books at this point, but we're working on that. Main central desk in the middle there, so that will be somewhat stationary, but everything else can move. We're looking at ways that we can maximize wall space, so looking at opportunities at the perimeter to get some low bookshelves, things like that, but just trying to think about learning, but day-to-day flexible adaptability, that kind of thing going forward. We're going to head up to the classroom wing in a second. There's some restrooms there. A little bit quicker. And looking back out to the courtyard there. So any opportunity we could look out to nature, look out to the extended learning environments, that kind of thing. That's every opportunity we'll take that.
Also that type of passive surveillance where everything is visible from every place else.
Yep. As we walk into your neighborhood, we are, again, developing the identity, what it means. So, again, we're relying on the school to help us understand what the neighborhoods are, the identity, the thing that the students can take pride in. You can see the transparency of the classrooms as it kind of bleeds out into the hallways there. So again, learning is everywhere is kind of like the overall concept in so many ways. So utilizing every wall space, utilizing every little nook and cranny, celebrating students' voice by the ability to pin up, or even just taking a group of kids out for one-on-one or whatever it might need to be. And we'll move into the classroom here. So you can see the natural light. The ceiling is sloped slightly just to kind of help reflect as much of that north light as possible. And that's the cone.
There it is. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'll take that slide. Just pop it up. Just to get that one slide up a little. Everybody, can everybody read that? This is what we discussed previously. Just wanted to go over this again with you. We're, again, really excited about this school. And like we spoke over the last few days, it doesn't come without its challenges. Can we get to that from here? Or okay. So from a budgetary standpoint, we started programming and budgeting this project probably back in 2020. And when the RFQ hit the street, we were looking at a 750 student station school budgeted at $24 million. We did some further analysis of the a number of students in that zone that we would need to rezone in order to get everybody into the school, and that number increased to 859. So between early 2021 and later in the year, we went ahead and decided to build the larger school so that when we brought students from that area in, we were capturing as many of them as we possibly could. So that increased the size of the school and increased the budget from 24 to about 27. So that is something that we did. We were prepared for that. What happened after that, we're all aware of the phenomenon in the marketplace and some things that are simply out of our control in terms of cost of material, scheduling in terms of delivery of material and lead times. So when we got to our schematic design in December of 2022, and we had two separate estimates done on this. Sean and his team have an independent cost estimator, and the team from Gil Bain also did an independent estimate. And both of those were in that $33 million range at that point. In the next 3 or 4 months, between December of last year and spring of this year, costs continue to spiral high, and we were now looking at the end of our design development, about $38 million for this project. We've looked at this a lot of different ways. We've already done some value engineering. We've identified approximately $1 million worth of savings. We're continuing that, looking at ways to cut costs on this building and still maintain the intent and quality and purpose that we designed from the beginning. And that was those 7 design drivers that you saw at the beginning of the presentation. The good thing is that we do have I've identified impact fees as additional funds to cover cost overruns on this project. We have a considerable amount of money available to us, and we actually have to spend that money. We have an obligation to spend those impact fees. We're nearly doubling the student population here in student station count, so that allows us to utilize a considerable amount of impact fee to make up the difference. We don't know what that bottom line is going to be yet. We won't actually take bids on this project until October, November. June or July for the bids, but then our GMP. Yeah, we'll be taking bids in June or July on it, and we'll be bringing that GMP to you once we get through that bidding process. So we don't know what that actual number is yet, but we're looking at a considerable amount of cost for this. And just so you know, we're not alone in this. I've talked to a number of my peers, a lot of my counterparts from different school districts, and they're seeing the same thing in terms of the cost that they're seeing, and they're also utilizing impact fees that they have available to help offset some of that cost. These are some examples here that were put together of some other projects. Are these all yours, Sean?
No. When we submitted the design development budget, as you would imagine, everybody kind of went, oh. So we were, Gil Bain, and with our own cost estimator, we went back and we said, we've got to give them explanation and show them examples of projects across the state that are showing similar types of percentage of increases. So all of these are, you know, within the two outliers are the one that's at 21% and the one that's at double, you know, at 100% increase, and we're right in the middle of that, which is where a lot of these other projects are. The escalation is, as we've been talking about and been talking about with Gil Bain, that escalation continues through the end of this year and into the next. So waiting is not necessarily a good thing.
We also looked at Beachside Elementary, which we bid last September, and if we were to bid that project today, it would cost us another $6 to $7 million just to bid if we were to build that project today versus last year. So it's a phenomenon, but it's real. We're eyes wide open going into this and looking at alternatives, but we wanted to make sure you fully understood the impact of this. And it's probably going to affect other projects we have coming down the road. We're already looking at those and preparing for a similar scenario and a similar solution on some other projects that are currently getting into design. Schedule is the other adverse impact that we have right now. The other challenge is in terms of availability of critical materials and lead times on a lot of our building materials. We had originally planned to open this school next August, next school year. We don't have a final schedule yet, but recent conversations this team has had indicates that that's unlikely. Due to the availability of long lead items that we're already seeing, by the time we go out on the street to purchase those materials, some of them are 10, 12 months out. So more likely we are looking at a mid-year opening in December rather than an opening for the school year. That's reality. We're pretty confident that that's going to be our case, although, like I said, we haven't really developed the full schedule yet.
So the other thing that we had talked about in terms of the high performance is what the cost premium is for doing some of this work, and then what's the return on investment, because it's all great to talk about these things, but if it's all only going to cost us extra, kind of hard to justify. So in this case, and Gilbain, as well as Little and our mechanical electrical team, also did the Neo City project in Osceola County. So there's a very firm understanding about what the costs are, and there's real data as to what the savings are on both high performance and the photovoltaic component for the project potential. So the project already, I'm going blind. The project already has got some has got the high performance components and is ready, will be ready to apply the photovoltaics. It's already set up with the inverter and the structure to be able to put on photovoltaics whenever that trigger is desired to be pulled. The high performance component is about $1.5 million of premium. It's about a 5% premium based on the construction cost of the work. The savings that you're looking at getting year over year is about $164,000 a year. So the return on investment is in 9 years. And then this is scheduled to be a 50-year building. So you've got 41 years of significant savings beyond that. For the zero energy component, to take it from a 25 EUI down to zero and be able to do that, the estimate for the photovoltaic component, and that's just the array itself being installed and connected. Jeff, I'm right about that, right? Okay. Is about 1.3. And the savings on that is about $90,000 a year, which would be a payback in 15 years. And then again, 50 years beyond that, you're paying zero utility bill. So 35 years of pretty much significant savings on in that regard. So when you look at high performance and net zero together, you're looking at an add of about 2.8, but you're looking at a savings of $250,000 a year, and you're looking at the return on investment payback to zero in 11 years. So and that's based on real data. That's based on what we expect and what we have found in the Osceola County project, and then extrapolated because that was a different type of a building. This has a kitchen. There are some other things that make this a little bit more complex. But still, to go zero energy, $250,000 in savings year over year is nothing to sneeze at. So, and that concludes our part of the presentation.
Thank you so much for that. Ms. Cuthbert.
Thank you. That was one of the best presentations I've seen, especially the video, the visual. A little dizzy.
I'd like to say I did it myself. But.
So would I, to be fair.
Very well done. I mean, what it did, it personified the technical advances of the school itself through your, and you showed it in the video, so it all paired. So I appreciate it very much. The design is very beautiful. I do have a couple of questions. Will there, when the school does open, when we finally find out, will there be time for teachers and staff have training on how to utilize the space and all the different ways to operate the technology and turning the light on and off? Because going from a very, very old school, as Ms. Burnett knows how old that is, to something so futuristic, will we have that opportunity?
You should have seen how excited they were for the bathrooms. They said they were, when we showed it, and they were like, are those bathrooms? They started clapping just at that. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on what the construction schedule ultimately is in terms of how it backs up against the mid-year, if we were to do it, assuming that would be the case. From a standpoint of training, it's critical, but yeah, there will absolutely be the ability to do that. Obviously, maybe not in the building itself, but certainly to educate them on how to operate the systems.
Well, and that's probably part of our duty to provide the training. But will you be able to train us to how to use it so we can train our staff?
Yeah.
That's...
Sir, can you come to the microphone so that everyone in the world can hear you on the World Wide Web? Thank you.
Sorry. Jeff Gilbain. Part of our turnover from the school to the facility is, one, maintenance, making sure they understand how the new equipment's operated, but two is basically delivery to the staff, faculty, and we do a complete walkthrough, and then we also have a team on standby for at least a week or two to help through that process while school ramps up. So, yeah, to answer your question, yes, there is.
Oh, good. Thank you. I wasn't clear, and I wasn't clear to myself either, so I appreciate it because I would like to be in on that training. I'd like to know how it works. I'll be out of office, so I'll make a phone call to Ms. Burnett.
We'll send a personal invite.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sorry, sir. I really like the open space with so many more students congregating. They have individual space, so they don't feel crowded or feel like they're being pushed together. And some kids can get a little full of anxiety if they're a little too close to one another. But I also like the way everything is visible for administration can control the kids, to oversee, to make sure, you know, if there seems to be a situation approaching, that it can be diffused before it happens. In other words, this design is proactive in our student behavior, not reactive. So I'm very grateful for that foresight. But otherwise, it's absolutely delightful. Thank you. I've been looking forward to seeing this and talking to you again. So I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. I liked the presentation as well. I'm sure you'll hear that five times today.
That's okay. I can hear it as many times as you want.
One of the questions I had is you mentioned that the lights were going to go from 9 lights to 5. Okay. So we are Florida. It does rain. It gets cloudy. So what happens when it's not pretty and sunny outside with our natural lighting and the ability to light the room?
So obviously when we have to put light fixtures in, we have to account for the artificial lighting of the space. So ultimately those lights are sized for that specifically. They're all on daylight sensors. So during the day, most of them won't be on. Obviously if we do have that condition where we tend to have, and the cloud cover means that we need to, those lights will come on automatically. So really the adjustment in the light quality shouldn't really change too much. Also the color temperature of the LED as well, in theory, reflects better the outside light than we may be used to with our fluorescent lights. So you don't necessarily notice that change as the kind of the outside conditions change, the inside stays consistent.
They're smart lights, I guess.
Yeah, smart as you can get.
Very good. And then you had mentioned a lot about security, which obviously we all have to think about these days. Sure. And that they are a lot of glass rooms. Is that's taken into consideration for the safety that we've expected?
Yeah, absolutely. Because to Linda's point, that the building is designed to be proactive from the standpoint of security, to provide for passive surveillance. As an example, Sandy Hook, from a security standpoint, was designed absolutely correctly. but the person who did that deed shot his way in to the building, and but was walking up to the school with guns, and nobody saw him. So by having these windows, by having that passive surveillance, you're able to see and react to what's going on. And that's, again, why there's this compartmentalization idea that is within the schoolhouses and then within the classrooms themselves, so that you do have the ability to react without sacrificing the supervision that we're, you know, that's so important that, that Ms. Haynes was talking about.
So what would we do in the glass classrooms where there's glass on the majority of the walls? What do we do for that?
Yeah, there are areas that are concealable between the edge of the corner of where those restrooms are back to the wall. There are blinds on the outside windows, and we can put blinds on the inside as well, but assuming that you can't react to that for whatever reason, there are places to shelter in place and hide in those classrooms so that you are obscured from view.
One thing I'd add to that as well, sure, is in the classrooms, obviously the ability to be able to react to something means that you can't feel trapped in a classroom. So every single classroom is connected one with the other by a swing door. So ultimately you can go from one classroom all the way down to the other end, so by passing through those doors. So it just means that, again, the kids can... kids and the faculty have a chance to react to anything they see coming at them.
In a secured hallway type environment.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, the classroom doors would be able to lock down. The access doors into the schoolhouses would lock down. So, again, the stairs would also lock. So if somebody was going in between floors and that button was pushed, then they're caught in the stair. They're not going anywhere. So...
Thank you, Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen. Excellent presentation. Makes you want to go to school, you know? I mean,
that's the hope.
It looks like a happy place. Just a couple of things. I'm assuming this school is going to have a pre-K program.
What we have are classrooms is the flexibility within, for example, the kindergarten area that is have the ability to flex and provide VPK if that or pre-K, I should say, within that area within the school itself.
Okay, the detail on the cafeteria or cafetorium, I'm not sure. Was there a slide on that, and I just didn't see it, or
we
have that down yet?
There was not a slide that actually showed that one component itself. We can go back and...
No, it's not necessary. Is it going to back up to the music room?
Yes, it will. Yeah, the music room is, and as a matter of fact, I was talking to the music teacher yesterday.
Said that.
There is a ramp so that they can go from the music room to the stage. So.
And the because it's a it looks like it's going to be one of our larger elementary schools, and because like every elementary school, when there is a show, a performance by the students, everyone will be there.
Right.
So I'm just thinking in terms of seating to watch various programs to make sure that we have enough.
Absolutely. And that was the reason why the desire from the school was to be able to have two spaces to be able to provide separated areas, for lack of a better term. But we, recognizing exactly what you said, we knew that desire for spilling out would be necessary. So in addition to the multipurpose room, which has the folding partition, it does go out, and it's a 16-foot high. It's a very high partition. So the ability to sit further back and have additional rows into the cafeteria space and still be able to see is part of the strategy and part of the design.
Great. Let's continue along that line with the audio system that you're putting in. One of the issues that is so annoying when you go see any show is when you can't hear what they're saying. So what provisions are you making to have a state-of-the-art audio system throughout?
Adrian conveniently walked out on that question. We've been working very closely with IT, with all of the state-of-the-art systems that are going to go in there. So I can't tell you specifically what that's going to be yet, but we're working closely with them to make sure that it does exactly what you want it to do.
In addition as well, the system will be reflective in that mixer space as well as the media and the multipurpose. So in theory, if you are having an event across all those three spaces, then the sound will be attuned for that.
And we're also taking acoustics into account. So there's acoustical panels and all things along those lines. So it's, we're limiting the amount of reverberation within those spaces. The music room, for example, isn't square. It's got some walls that are canted so that you don't have that reflective going back and forth across. You've got some breakup of the noise. Just subtle, small things like that as we go through the design itself.
Well, I'm so glad you had a great meeting yesterday, and there Wonderful. Was a lot of excitement. I'm sure there was. And
they were ecstatic. It was great.
It makes you excited, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because you're creating something and for them, and they're happy with what you're doing, and I know they appreciate
it. So they were so excited about the fact that we listened. Yeah. And I had a couple of teachers say, I remember you, even during the walkthrough of the school, I remember you asking questions. And so even at that point, it was they were seeing us that we were trying to pay attention to what they wanted.
What did the media specialists have to ask?
It was interesting. I find media specialists to be the ones with the most experience and the ability to they know what they want. Okay, was that the right way to say that?
We listened some more yesterday.
That was a polite way of saying that. Yes.
But there was Pete had probably a 15-minute conversation after our presentation was done. About the bookshelves and the desire for things on the perimeter, and again, it's looking at the flexibility of that space. So we are going to continue that discussion about how it's going to work for her. And one of the discussions was that skills lab in the makerspace, which is across the mixer, may flip, and the makerspace may be within the media center proper, and then the skills lab be moved out. So those are the kinds of, and when we had that discussion, they were like, oh, and all of a sudden some of their anxiety was alleviated. But there's going to be continued discussions. And I think it's going to be a lot about the furniture. It's going to be a lot about the bookshelves because there's a reluctance. If I remember the discussion, there's a reluctance for the movable bookshelves, which honestly, in my opinion, and I'm not a media center specialist and I don't play one on TV, but that type of flexibility and adaptability to have them mobile provides the ability to, that can be a teaching space or that can be stacks or whatever you need it to be. So it's just something that we're going to need to continue to work through so that she's satisfied with where we're headed.
It goes back to the training as well. You basically were showing them a space in a rendering of one way you could use the space. So obviously they see that and think, well, where are my book stacks going to go?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we haven't shown them the multiple other different renderings that we could. So when we got into it a little bit more at the end of our presentation yesterday, we shared some of the thoughts about how we think it would work and how we need their input to help us finalize that. So that was a great discussion, and we welcome any discussion like that. So
it was a very good discussion. I joke, but it's
as I looked at your drawing of the approach to the school from the ways where the students will be either dropped off by the bus or dropped off by parents, and you have that, it appears to be a nice distance between that and going up in the ramp and the steps. How far would you say that is from that central drop-off point to, like, the front door if you're going into the office, let's say, for a parent to...
Yeah. Between 100 and 150 feet, I'd say. I mean, at the end of the day, the canopy obviously connects them, but, yeah, it depends where you get dropped off as well. If there's more parents than being dropped off, they may have to go a little bit further up the loop, and so you come up perpendicular to the entry. But, again, the flexibility is there, so they can...
And the other thing I couldn't tell from when you walk in the office, let me ask you this first. In your meeting yesterday, did you have office specialists, secretaries there?
Yes, sir.
Did you have the people who are in the front office?
Yes.
Where the receptionist kind of
I don't
of
know
person?
That the receptionist was there, but there were several people that were from the central office as opposed to guidance counselors themselves.
This particular school will have a lot of parents, people who will be walking in, coming in. Maybe times when they're not there on time when the school day starts, but may come 5 minutes late. So there's that. I guess my question is, will there be ample space in the office in that once you walk through the front door, between the front door and the counter, to accommodate?
It's a pretty gracious, I will
pretty
just say
space.
That it's a pretty gracious space from that set of front doors to where the counter is. There's a very wide walkway that goes, that's where the control point of entry, where the doors are going to be buzzed in. And then it wraps around to the conference room. So there's and the only thing that's there is, and we can, is it possible to go back to the presentation? Really?
I think you can do it.
Really?
Well, maybe
not. I'm not overriding anything. But the only thing that's there intentionally is the space specifically for, let me see here. I want to. So when you come in the set of doors, this is the lobby. This is like the entrance way right here. Then you've got a public toilet. You've got a glassed-in entry, and then you've got a reception area directly to the left of it. So, yeah, I mean, this whole area is able to be used, and we've got a furniture layout rough that shows, you know, chairs. And
yeah, my whole point in asking this is just to make sure that you have the input from the people that work in that space.
Yes, sir.
Because they live in that space, and they know the issues they have now. And, of course, when you're building something new, they want to not have the same issues that they have now.
Yeah.
So whatever...
It's a very tiny space in the existing school.
Yes, it is very tiny space.
Yes, sir.
So that sounds great. And then finally, Mr. Chair, and thanks for letting me go on here a little bit. I'm just wondering, in the staff parking lot, and I'm not sure where that is in this, we were having a brainstorming session at another school, and I brought up, I think it would be possible to have some electrical charging stations for staff vehicles.
Yeah,
great idea.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert.
Very short. I just wanted to say how grateful I know I am that when administration will probably occupy this first, they can adapt and they can switch their offices to how they use it. And then when staff comes in, office specialists as well as custodial care and teachers especially, how they can use set things up how they want to do it. And then all that can change when students come in.
Yes.
And so that the flexibility, as you said, and the adaptability of the space, and of course, it might, what's good now is not going to be good 5 years from now. So it's a gift, I think, that we're able to give our students that flexibility, and especially our staff, who, I mean, the light bulb may not turn on that first couple of weeks, but it will maybe the end of the second year.
Sure.
So, and you allow for growth, professional growth. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Just very quickly in response, one of the community discussions that we had very early on was that they wanted to potentially use a space for after-hours learning for adults, for clinic use. So part of the way that the space is configured allows that, what was the skills lab or that maker space directly off of the media center, to be used for that purpose with restrooms, but still a secure environment that they can get to that location, but they're not able to get access to the rest of the school. So having that ability, should the community and should community organizations desire to make use of it, it was something that they had asked for, and we were able to accommodate. So,
in theory, that could also be said for the media and the multi-purpose room. I mean, that whole South Bar, in theory, could be shut off to the rest of the school.
And thank you for paying attention to the district, as well as, you know, Terry Teets itself and the community, to accept, be patient, and to adapt the school the way we would like it to. So it's
truly he didn't give
remarkable.
Me a choice.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
This has been a long time coming for this school. It was promised many years ago, and we're finally now at a point where it's going to happen. So I'm very thankful for all of our students and our community there. So on the one slide where you were talking about the increased cost piece, I actually think there may be a date that's inaccurate.
It
on
is.
This.
It is. It's not. I'm not projecting forward to December of 2022.
Okay.
It was 2021.
All right. Because I was like, if that's the case and we're projecting, I'd go with that. And I had spoken with Steve about this when we met last week. We lost 4 square feet per student station. And so what's the real reasoning behind that? Because I'm all about there being classroom space.
Efficiency. Sure. It has to do with efficiency. There are, for example, that because that mixer space is combined without a corridor, there's that type of grossing factor becomes very small, much smaller. So when you're talking about 4 square feet per person, it's not a significant number. And while I haven't done the math, I believe that our grossing factor is going to be less than what we would typically be looking at.
Yeah. I caught something there that I want to make sure that we are on the same page. That doesn't mean classroom size. That doesn't. That's just overall building size. And when you do the math, so yeah, if you're concerned that we've reduced classroom size by square feet per student, that's not the case. It's just the way the math worked out with the overall size of the building. And we did reduce it down a little bit there, you'll see, to try to just for some efficiencies, like Sean said. So I understand now your concern.
Thank you. And then, so what's the suggested opening date once again?
Well, again, we don't have a schedule inked out yet, but due to what we believe that we're seeing, it would be a Christmas break opening next December of 2023. Now that
December of 2023 with students, if all were to go well, being on campus of January of 2024.
Yes, ma'am. And that would be the move of the existing student population. And we have another piece to this, which Stephanie will bring to you at another time, with working on the rezoning part, because there is other that would only bring the 460 students that are there now. We have more to bring in. We wouldn't attempt to do that mid-year. That would happen
happen like August of 24.
Yes.
August of 24 is when we would actually see the school
at full capacity. Yes.
Okay. One other question, and it kind of piggybacks on a little bit of what was already said. So when you're looking at the spaces and you're talking about the flexibility, and even like with the media center having, bookcases that move and things like that, tell me, because you've had conversations with the staff, where do they foresee, like, faculty meetings or things where teachers get together and staff gets together? Where would those be happening, and what type of furniture would we be looking at? Because kids can sit on one type of thing, but when you get older in age, you may not be able to sit on the same type of thing that, you know, a six-year-old can sit on. Been taken into account?
Yeah. Each of the schoolhouses has a dedicated teacher planning that's directly in the middle of the schoolhouse. And I can't tell you specifically what that furniture will be, but I can assure you it's going to be suitable for adults because that's what it's for. So each in each case, and it's seven classrooms, so you're talking about one of those teacher planning spaces in each of the six schoolhouses themselves.
Okay, so that's perfectly fine for when they have a planning time during the day and they're wanting to come together to collaborate. What I was looking at is if it's pre-planning time and mm-hmm. the administration's wanting to hold a faculty meeting with everyone to set the tone for the year, serve breakfast, serve lunch, what kind of space are we looking at? Or, you know, each week they possibly hold a faculty meeting after school. So that's I'm looking at what space were you looking at where it would hold everyone?
The obviously the media center would be able to hold everyone, and you've also got the skills lab that's directly adjacent to it. The mixing area is probably a bit large for a purpose like that. The multi-purpose room may be able to be used for that as well. And again, if you're setting things up for a performance, chairs are going to be one of those things, and they're going to be for adults, right? So there are many different places that we can look at for housing the full staff in the building itself.
That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. So I have a question. I saw solar panels on top of the building. Are we seeking out any federal grants or any grants that are available to help cover some of that cost?
Not at the moment, but that's an excellent question, and we'll get right on that.
Yeah. And also on the point of safety and security, and Dr. Newman, I cringed when I saw the classroom because there's this beautiful big window which kind of goes against the MSD Marjorie Stoneman Douglas recommendation of, you know, being able to, so nobody from the outside can see in. Clearly that's a big window in the, get the importance of that, because right outside of that window is that space that Ms. Haynes was referring to. Are they going to be able to see? And the answer is yes. So it kind of made me nervous. That's the, you know, so I don't expect an answer to that, but I think it's important that we also, because, you know, before we are able to advertise something as such, we want to make sure that we can actually, because again, those big windows make me nervous. Just, you know, that's just a thought.
We did have a discussion. We've had discussions with security as well, and we talked through that. And one of the things that we had discussed was putting interior blinds into those spaces so that they can become opaque if that is in times of an event to be able to react. So again, you're able to respond to that. Without having to sacrifice the supervision aspect of it.
And Those were the two questions that I had. Does anybody else have anything else? Hearing none, thank you all so much. We're super excited about this. This community deserves it. It's long overdue, and I am extremely excited that we are able to get this off of the ground. It is 1:41. We will take a 10-minute break, and we will reconvene at 1:51. Thank you. To be next, which is the Insurance Committee discussion. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, Ms. Hazel.
There's a fee. It's called food. We all want a Dairy Queen blizzard.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Best insurance there is.
Yes.
All right. So I am going to turn it over to Ms. Sneed, our Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Trent Sheely, the Director of Risk Management and Benefits.
Thank you, Ms. Hazel. Good afternoon, board members, Mr. Doran, Aaron, Ms. Lieben. So today we're going to go over some updated information on our insurance committee's work that's been done. They've been able to accomplish quite a bit, and I'm going to go through the timeline of the implementation of the new policies and also give you an update on some of the wellness initiatives that we have started in the district. So going into this, the insurance committee met, and the goal was to, of course, improve the overall health and well-being for our employees, to contain the cost, and to offer a free insurance plan to all employees, and that's to employee only. So we have a really great insurance committee made up of lots of members of our organization who are here today, thankfully. And when I call your name, if you wouldn't mind just raising your hand or standing up, I would appreciate it. We have Dr. Christina Raimundo, and she's a non-bargaining representative. We have Ms. Stephanie Workman, also a non-bargaining representative. Kathy Knowles with AFSCME. Carol Sawyer with AFSCME. John Darby with VUE Instructional. Marlo Spallone, and I'm sorry, I'm probably butchering your name, but she's with VUE Instructional. Teresa Flaherty with VUE Support, Lori Miller with VUE Support, and then for our non-insurance committee members who attend and support, we have Ms. Rachel Hazel, our interim superintendent. We have Trent Sheely, our director of risk and benefits, myself, Lisa Sneed, CFO, Mark West, our chief of human resources, and Elizabeth Albert, our VUE union president. On the Florida healthcare side, we have Gio, which is George Apple, David Miller, and Dr. Zuckerman. And also, Trent, will you introduce? Yes.
CEO for Florida Healthcare.
Dave Spindell. Thank you so much for being here. On the Aon side, we have Lucianne Tafuri, we have Joanne Yu, and we have Alex Pafu. Again, I'm sure I butchered that name. But it's quite a team of people, and I'm really happy to share that this team worked really well together this year and have come forward with some good options for the employees. As far as the timeline goes, the committee started meeting back in September. In the April-May timeframe, we held additional meetings because we had so many different policy options that we were reviewing and vetting. That we wanted to make sure when we came to you for this workshop that we would have options to present. That we would have options to present to you as a committee recommendation. And then, thankfully, this board made it a priority to really support the employees in their mental health and well-being. And so we now have an internal position, Dia Goff, who's heading that up, and she's got two great events planned for us. She's got one at the end of the school year. Friday evening, I think, June 3rd, down in New Smyrna Beach, and also to kick off back to school. She's secured the Daytona Speedway, and we're going to have a big wellness kickoff event to help educate employees on the new plan options. And then our staff is going to be going out and speaking to people at Transportation and Schoolway Cafe, and we'll have open enrollment from August 8th through the 19th. I also failed to mention that on the 14th of June, we're going to be coming back to the board for a recommendation and asking for a vote for approval on the policy plans that we're recommending as a committee for the next school year. Again, hopefully I'm doing this in the right order. We did want to make sure that we were able to accomplish a plan that's going to help improve the overall health, to contain cost, and to offer free insurance to all employees. So the committee was able to accomplish that, and they have come forward unanimously with some plan options. So that's great news because it's a lot of work. There's a lot of numbers that they look at, a lot of different options, plans. They ask lots of questions. The actuaries go back and run all kinds of numbers. Florida Healthcare and Aon were just really great to work with. Their staff worked tirelessly to come up with options for us. And this is one thing we are really proud of this year, that we were able to come back with a new free employee-only plan option, and that's going to be an Alt-HMO. And this is for most employees, when we surveyed them, want to see a low per paycheck cost. So their paycheck cost for employee-only will be zero. This will be a free plan for them. And that offers significant savings when compared to the current HMO plan. For those people who don't like change at all, we still will have the existing HMO plan, but it will be an increase of 6.5%. And that's because of the rate cap that was put in place last year. And then we have those employees who really like to make sure that they want to be able to go directly to a specialist without getting a referral from an HMO, and they want to be able to have out-of-network options. So there's a third alternative plan for those individuals. So what we did when we were working on this was work very closely with our consultant and the actuaries, and the data shows that the majority of the people in our triple option plan and POS plan are not really using it as those plans were intended. They're really using it almost like an HMO. Sorry. Anyway, so really there's only like 1.5% of our people who are using it that way. So by removing some of the costly features of those plans, that's how we're able to accomplish savings for everybody. Single employee savings will be recognized by the Alt-HMO2. And the savings, so the school board currently is contributing $565 per employee per month for the regular plans. This is going to be a savings that will... I'm not doing anything in the presentation, is switching. Anyway, this is going to be a savings of like $333 annually off of that $565, and so that's something that will need to be come back to the board and be negotiated with the unions. This is a detailed sheet that shows the various aspects of the plan options that are being presented. Just wanted to share this with you, but this again will be what staff goes out and really works on educating and answering employees' questions on over this course of from now through the summer. And again, I just wanted to share with you the wellness things. I think that Trent handed out a flyer for the Daytona Speedway, the back to work plan, back to school year on the 8th of August. But this is the flyer also for the June 3rd celebration, end of year. And then there's this nice little logo that Trent and Dia worked on that's going to be kind of our new wellness logo. And with that, I would like to just entertain any questions and hopefully.
Thank you so much. Board, does anybody have any questions? Mr. Persis.
Mr. Chair, this committee is like awesome. I mean, you all just figure it out. I'm so glad you do. And you do all the hard lifting with this, the heavy lifting, and bring it to us. So it's great to see everyone working together, all the unions, everyone, district staff, you know. It's wonderful to see. I was wondering, what do you all anticipate, or how many people do you anticipate getting on the zero-cost plan? Is there any projections?
So currently, really what we're kind of thinking is all the members that are on the point of service plan. So currently the point of service plan is our lowest cost plan.
Okay.
So ideally we're thinking a lot of the employees that are on the point of service will move over to the to that free HMO2 plan. And then honestly, you know, our plan is to educate the employees. You know, a lot of our pretty much our current plans have been these same plans for the past 15, 20 years, right? And so, you know, so our plan is to educate employees, and I mean, there may be employees that are on the current HMO plan that are like, you know what, I could really, you know, maybe I'm not, maybe I'm healthy, I'm not going to the doctor, and I would want to switch down to this plan and to the free plan. And then also for the current triple option, really what that point of service three plan is the triple option without that second tier. That's what that point of service three plan. So for those, like Lisa was saying, for those individuals that want, you know, they hurt their foot and they don't want to go to their PCP and they want to go straight to a foot doctor, under the PPO, the point of service plan, they're able to do that, or if anybody wanted to have out-of-network options for that.
I've been a member of Florida Healthcare ever since there was a Florida Healthcare plan back in the old days when it first started, and we had many options then. You know, I remember Blue Cross and so many other companies that have come and gone, but Florida Healthcare has always been here, and I'm so satisfied. I am one of those 99.8% people who never use the options with triple option. I've had triple option all this time, you know, because it was just like, we got to get the best, you know. I don't care what it costs. My wife, you know, we got to get the best, you know. All right, we're getting the best. And then every time I say, you know, we never use anything from this. I don't care. We're getting the best. We keep the best. All right, we're in for the best. So I'm just, I can't wait to, like, show her this now, you know, that, hey, you know, we're with everyone else. We don't, nobody else uses it either, but everyone's paying for it. So, yeah, I'm glad to see the insurance committee finally drill down a little bit with that. And Florida Healthcare was receptive to that as well. Yeah, just want to say thank you.
Thank you. I do want to add, because I'd probably not fair if I don't, but Florida Healthcare, the actual cost of what we are costing them is 12%. So that 6.5% rate cap was a good deal. And then again,
and assume that it was, yeah, should be much higher than
6%. Right. And then really, initially, they were only going to be able to honor the 6.5 on the existing plan options, but they came back and they came up with new plan options for us that maintained that cap as well. So we're really thankful for the hard work that they did and the commitment that they showed through this process.
Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. Everybody did a great job. I know how what a struggle that is with my current position, and we all always have our comments about our insurance too, but it's not free, and it is a challenge. So thank you all for working together and making this happen. One of the things I wanted to ask was, what is the copay going to be for that $0 plan?
Yeah, so if you look at the slide, I guess it's slide 17, so the free plan. So we do still have the wellness clinics that Florida Healthcare offers. That's all over the county. Those are still $8, but say if you were going to your PCP that's a non-Florida Healthcare doctor, then that would be $35. But say that, you know, you go right over here to the Spring Garden location and it's a Florida Healthcare PCP, that's still only $8. So if it's a non-Florida Healthcare PCP, it's $35 for that.
Okay. But they have the $8 option.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. So the $8 wellness, those are at all the clinics. So what those are kind of like urgent cares that Florida Healthcare has. That's all over the counties that our employees, that, you know, there's a high utilization rate for those. And it's pretty much like a one-stop shop that, you know, if you're not feeling well, you can go there, you can be seen treatment, you can get your meds. They even, if you had to do an x-ray, a lot of those facilities, they have x-rays. And so it's kind of a one-shot stop, and that's all for us for $8. And then, like I said, if you have any type of Florida Healthcare PCP, then it's $8.
And is that the price that they're paying this year? Is it $8 for a visit?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah. That $8 for all the wellness centers that are all over the county, that's, I know in my 9 years, it's always been $8, so that's kind of stayed status quo here.
And I just had one more comment, and I hope that everybody on the insurance committee goes out and talks to your fellow coworkers and lets them know that you advocated for them and that you're their voice, so that the employees know that they did have a voice in this process, because it's through you. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Payne.
I want to thank the insurance committee. I want to thank them for all the work that they did and the tough questions that you asked. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the time each of you have put in. My question really is for those of you that are here that are representing the insurance committee today. Is there anything else that you feel that we should know or that we should consider when looking at this, because you're the group that's put the time in?
Welcome.
Everyone. My name is John Darby, and I represent View on the committee, and I work at River Springs. And I've been on the insurance committee for quite some time, a number of years now. And our goal has always been to try to control costs while simultaneously being able to provide good options for the employee. And to almost always, if ever possible, to provide what we discuss as the free option for the single employee. And for many years, and I think I mentioned this, may have mentioned this last time, the way that we have always attempted to do that is to tweak the different parts of the plans and the plan design by pulling a lever here or pulling a lever there, you know, increasing your maximum out of pockets and things like that. And that will get you so far, but it doesn't get you, you know, double digits of savings. In this instance, we tried to accomplish those two goals, control costs while providing options, but we also discussed as a committee incentivizing people to move towards sort of the managed care options that are offered through Florida Healthcare, because that's the lowest cost option when people get their healthcare and are taken care of on a regular basis. So one of the primary components of what we're recommending to you is that HMO2 option, which is going to be the free option. And the reason that we wanted that to be the free option rather than the POS plan is because that does incentivize individuals to make the conscious choice to move into the managed care option. And hopefully they will take advantage of that, whether they're going to their primary care physician, which would be the Florida Healthcare for the $35, or whether it would be the $8 option, which is where most people go to the extended hours clinics. And I think we're actually changing the name from Workforce Wellness to Extend. It used to be called Workforce Wellness, but they serve more people than us, as was pointed out before. So Extended Hours Clinics is the name of it, but that's where most people go. So that was our sort of our reasoning this time. And in the past, the triple option plan, as you mentioned, is the plan that for many years many people went to. And so we wanted to try to keep some continuity there with the POS plan, and the way that we achieved the savings was by removing that middle tier. And for those who aren't familiar with what the middle tier was, it was really like an expanded network of doctors that are not employed by Florida Healthcare that would still give you the option of going to more physicians or have options to go out of that network. But as Trent pointed out, the vast majority of people, and as you pointed out, the vast majority of people pay for that option, but they never use it. So that sort of was the reasoning behind the movement that we made this year.
Thank you. And I appreciate you coming up and sharing that piece, because you have been an integral part of this. And I think everyone needs to know that all of you are at the table, and especially with all of the years that you've served and the knowledge you have, that is there any, like if we could wave a magic wand, is there a perfect plan, you know, that would make everyone happy? Absolutely not. Because the insurance companies are here to make money, just, you know. So I do appreciate all the time you put into it. And my one other question I had is, on the $8 fee, you know, if you go to, we're calling it what,
Extended hours.
Extended hours now. So what actually are those hours?
Yeah, so there are, so it's they're open 6 days a week. I know for Monday through Friday, it's almost around like 7 a.m. to about 7 p.m. I know I've had to go and get blood, and it's opened at 7 a.m. So I think the hours around like 7 a.m., 7 p.m., and then some of the facilities on Saturdays, they're open from like 7 to noon, somewhere around there.
Okay, so because I actually use the cheapest of the, you know, school board insurance. Years ago, when we had all those other options like Mr. Persis, I had what they referred to as the Platinum plan. Yeah. And the only time I ever used the Platinum plan were the two times I had children, okay? And other than that, I just paid for it. So I decided to go with the cheaper route since I don't have anyone else to even insure anymore. But previously, if I'm correct, on the wellness centers or clinics or whatever you want to call them, they were originally only open Monday through Friday, right? And they closed at 5 p.m.? Okay. So then one of the things I think that we probably need to communicate a little bit better, just because I've heard from people, and what happens is if you don't have to use that, and I think sometimes the people that use that a lot may be individuals with kids, you know, because kids tend to always get sick at night or on the weekend. But if you don't have kids, then you kind of lose track of, well, that is one of the services. So I'd like to see a little bit better marketing or communication as you guys put this together to share that component so that everybody knows where they're located and what the hours are. Because I've had people call me and, you know, just out of the blue on a weekend and say, you know, I don't know where to take my child because they're sick. Because I think there was a perception that they weren't available on the weekend. So I'm happy to hear there's.
And just so you know, that has been a major point of discussion as we've worked through this year, is the education piece and making sure that everyone is aware of what is available and when it is available and how easy it is to take advantage of it. Some of the things that we have discussed in attempt to overcome that is whether we use our digital presence to convey information directly to employees, which is the way most of us interact or communicate within the district now, rather than our mailboxes. But there are some of us who still use our mailboxes, and we could put flyers in the mailboxes as well. I know from the school standpoint, either one of those could work, but I think the digital option would be the best one. When you get into transportation and Schoolway Cafe, those individuals have different schedules and it doesn't quite work as well, which it makes a lot more sense. We've discussed going out and having direct meetings to see those people in person. But I think that leveraging our digital presence, particularly through the website, and one issue that, although Trent probably won't like it when I say this, but we do have one minor issue with the naming of the department. The department is named Risk and Benefits Management. When most people go on the website to look for information, they don't think of risks and benefit management. They go up and down that list and up and down that list and up and down that list, and they never find it. It really needs to be benefits and risk management so that it's at the top of the list, because it starts with a B, and benefits is what people think of first. And then you could have this, you know, as a part of the splash screen when you open up for that department, here are all your benefits. Click here to access the locations, or click here to access the list of doctors or something like that. Those are the types of conversations that we have had in the committee, and hopefully we will be able to implement some of them.
And I even hear you with the whole benefit thing, but so many times what you hear people saying is health insurance or insurance. Like, right. They don't even think of risk management or benefits.
Or you know, perhaps we could, although the other departments may not like it, maybe benefits and risk management could have two links, one that's their real name and one that says healthcare benefits on the list. And that might solve the problem as well.
And I like your ideas of how to get the information out. And I do think that maybe a prominent spot on the web page, because when you've got that child that's sick and you're trying to figure out where can I take them,
they need some place really quick where they can go click and see, well, who's open and what are the hours.
And there was 1 year that we did refrigerator magnets as well, because I know when my kids were little, that's the first place you're going to look for that stuff, put the magnet on there so that they could find that rather quickly as well.
Thank you, and thank you.
Ms. Cuthbert?
I just have a few. I think I'm the least educated about insurance benefits. I have always.
I don't think
voted.
Any of us are really completely educated about health insurance benefits.
I've always voted the way the committee has suggested, and especially if Carol Sawyer's on it, I'll go with whatever she says. I just have a couple of questions. When this is posted, I think at the first look at the very bottom, the single costs and the family costs, that's an awful lot of money, but what's not figured in that is the school district's contribution, correct?
Correct. That's just the overall premium that this does not. That's just the overall premium. It doesn't have the 565.
So when this goes out to that's going to be included then, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure, because looking at that, and then second of all, I noticed that in the prescription drugs, of course, there's Florida Healthcare and there's Walgreens. What if there's a CVS on the corner and a Florida Healthcare employee wants to go to CVS? Is the Yes, yeah. Okay. I'm just thinking, and there's usually a Walgreens at least on every corner in most neighborhoods, but I was just concerned that that too needs to be kind of explained. Best pricing at Walgreens. So if they choose, there's a CVS, you know, three doors up from them, then it would cost them a little bit more. Well, yeah, my husband always filled his in with that as well. So thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks for all your hard work. That's another season's over, so thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right, so just really quick, did I read that the vote was unanimous? Nodding heads, and I did quick math. 75% of the members of the insurance committee are comprised of VUE support, AFSCME, and did I miss anything? That's it. And so then there are two members who are district staff. Is that accurate? And the vote was unanimous. So this is what the insurance committee wanted. Yes. I see nodding heads.
We always want more, but this was the best that we could do under the circumstances we have with the time we were given.
Perfect. And so with that being said, I like to make that very clear, because in a little while this will go out on social media and it'll say the school board did this. And the reality is that arguably the school district has two representatives on this committee, and the rest of the folks are representative of each of our labor unions. And so I see nodding heads, I see smiles, he wants more, but that's okay. We talked about media specialists and how amazing they are, so I wish we could give you more, but that means the world to me, because it lets me know that everyone was at the table, and you don't always agree. Last time we had quite a bit of conversations and wish we could have, should have, might have, but it seems like this time around we are smiling and nodding our heads. So thank you for your work. I appreciate it. And if anybody else has any other questions, we'll move on to our next agenda item. And again, thank you to those who came to support this cause. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, all right, we will move on to budget.
I think Mr. Shandell wanted to say.
Sure, Mr. Shandell, come say hello.
You were here last time as well, remember.
I want to thank the school board and the insurance committee for all the work that was done. We've been partners for a long time, and I think that we've been very fair. We've always tried to be very fair. And I did want to share with you just briefly that, you know, we're continuing to expand in Volusia County. We wanted to make sure we didn't ignore any opportunity, so I wanted to let the board know that we've leased a 13,000-square-foot building, which was a Walgreens right in the heart of Deltona, and we're converting that into a medical center and pharmacy. It'll have lab draw, x-ray, and all those other things, so it'll improve the access for all the members of Volusia County School Board. And we're also looking at additional sites in New Smyrna Beach and in West Daytona. And in addition, in DeLand, right here in your backyard, we're expanding into the shopping center and leasing additional space to expand that facility. And we hope to, down the road here, find a property that's near that so that we can actually consolidate all those services into one brand-new building. So we're not sitting back. We're actually listening to our members and our groups when they ask us about these things. And we did our homework, and we found that these are opportunities that we need to pursue. But thank you very much for the opportunity, and we appreciate serving the Volusia County School Board. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, next item on the agenda is the budget update 3.01. Ms. Hazel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this presentation will be done by our CFO, Ms. Lisa Sneed, and she will be joined. I was just checking. Yep, she will be joined by Kezia Navarro as our budget director.
Thank you. And I failed to also just really recognize Trent Shealy as our new director of insurance risk benefits, and he's done a great job through this process as well. So thank you, Trent. And now our new budget director, Kessia, is here. We'll go quickly through the budget presentation. Thank you for your time. So just our strategic planning goal is goal number 4, which is focused on resources and operational processes. What we're going to be talking about today is our approach of budgeting coming forward, what we've done over the past year, our timeline, what our FTE looks like. Those are our full-time equivalent student projections. What our FEFP, which is our Florida Educational Finance Program funding projections, look like, our ESSER funds, which are our emergency relief funds for COVID, and what our financial condition ratio is projected out to look like. I just want to remind everybody that this is very preliminary in the budget process. The numbers will be changing, but this is just based on our historical data and projecting out. So as we have in the past couple of years, we're focused on our goals. We're focused on prioritizing our students and our staff and leveraging those emergency dollars to do so. What we've been able to do over the past year is accomplish reaching the 47.5 minimum for teachers. We've been able to increase salaries for all of our staff. We've brought additional custodial services in-house. We provided additional classroom support to our students, increased our summer programming, addressed learning loss through extra minutes and tutoring, increased our graduation rate, and received the highest accreditation rating. The timeline for budget is dictated by Florida statutes and the truth and millage process, and so we have a couple of budget workshops set up, the one that we're doing today, one that we will have on June 14th. The first public hearing for budget will be on the 26th of July. Right after that, the property appraiser sends out the preliminary notices of taxes to the citizens, and then we come back in September on the 13th for our final budget hearing. Looking at this chart, you've seen this in the past, and we talked about how when COVID hit, it reduced our enrollment numbers. And you can see from this chart, if you look at the 23 projected column, our enrollment is getting closer to where we were pre-COVID, but not quite. But there's something new here that hasn't shown up at this time of the budget process, and that is that DOE is including the scholarship students. So the 4,006 students are endowment scholarship students that are being included in our numbers. The breakdown of where those students reside is mainly in K through 3 and 4 through 8. There's a few students sprinkled out in the other areas, but the bulk of them are in the earlier years. There's two different types of endowment scholarships, students with unique abilities, and those numbers have grown pretty steadily, not significantly over the past 5 years. But the big growth in endowment scholarships has occurred over the past 4 years in the regular endowment scholarships. And this is being this type of trend is really being seen all over the state of Florida. We've been, Kessie and I have been looking at a lot of other school boards' budget presentations at this point to see what if they're seeing the same thing we're seeing, and everybody is echoing the same sentiment at this point. So what that means for us in terms of funding from the FEFP is that it looks like we've had pretty nice growth in our funding. We almost have $40 million additional dollars coming in, but a big chunk of that $40 million goes to the endowment scholarships. And then we have earmarked categoricals, which are buckets of money that we have to put money back into. So if you look at the $40 million that we're getting, and you back out the endowment scholarships and then back out the earmarked categoricals, we're actually dealing with a revenue loss of $7 million. So thankfully, as we've been discussing over the past couple of years, we do have ESSER funds that are helping us, and we are spreading those funds over the fiscal years, planning to use them all the way out until fiscal year 24. When ESSER 3 came into place last Christmas time almost, we were required to go out and talk to the community about how they wanted to see those dollars spent. And so we did talk to parents, we talked to faculty, we talked to board members, we talked to union reps, community members, students, and other. And overwhelmingly, the place that people wanted to see those dollars put were on employee recruitment and retention strategies, because we all know that it's the Great Resignation and school systems are not alone in that. The other area that the funds were overwhelmingly needing to be provided was to mental health services and support. And then in addition, the federal government, DOE, sent this memo out, which said, because of the harmful impact of shortages in educators and school staff, it could provide difficulty in transporting students, serving meals, accessing mental health services, providing qualified teachers, et cetera. And so what they were recommending is that these dollars could be used to increase educator and staff compensation and to also support staff well-being and working conditions. So that's exactly what the choice that the school board made. And of course, since the majority of our budget is people, when we provide compensation to our people, that's a direct benefit to the students, because we are keeping and retaining people, quality people, to provide education to our students. Some of the other big dollar impacts that we have coming forward for next fiscal year are the fact that we are bringing custodial staff in-house. Although we de-scoped the ABM contract, the net impact of bringing 24 additional schools on is a $7.7 million increase to the school system. And also every year, Human Resources meets with principals. They have formulas that project how much enrollment they think they're going to have in the schools, and based on that enrollment, where they think that the allocation should be placed. And they listen to the principals, especially during COVID now. There's a lot of needs out there. And principals will say, well, I really need this for some specific reason that you really can't glean from formulas. Well, through that process, we do give out additional allocations, and that equates to $6.1 million projected for next year. Florida retirement system always has an increase, and that's got a $3.1 million impact. And then, of course, there's the new legislation from the state that we need to pay our employees a minimum of $15 an hour by October of 2022, and that will cost us an additional $2.6 million. So this next chart just gives you a breakout of where the additional staff allocations were placed for the $6.1 million. You can see that the majority of those allocations are going to the core area, followed by teacher on assignment, paraprofessionals, and guidance. This next chart is really kind of the summary of all of this information, which is that we know that we are utilizing ESSER dollars to get us through the pandemic. We were hopeful and still hopeful that our enrollment numbers will go up and bring additional revenues in. However, if it were not for the ESSER dollars, this fiscal year right now, we would be in a financial problem with our financial condition ratio being a negative 9.92. However, since we do have the emergency relief dollars and we are utilizing them to help with that scenario, you can see that although we're only required to really set up a budget for 1 year, we're projecting outwards so that we can position ourselves for how we should deal with this, and we'll be keeping a close pulse on what our enrollment looks like. But we can make it past 1 year with when the ESSER dollars go away. We could still sustain ourselves in fiscal year 25, but if we don't identify additional revenue sources or make expenditure reductions by fiscal year 26, we would have a negative financial condition ratio. So I wanted to highlight the bottom. I think I've already stated it, but just to be very clear, the ESSER dollars are being used on recurring costs, and we would need to identify other funding sources or make expenditure reductions in FY 25 when those funds are no longer available. That's pretty much what I have, and as I had stated, I just want to remind you that this is preliminary in the process. We will be coming back in June with more numbers. We'll be going into capital budgets at that point, and then, of course, in July, we'll come back with an even more detailed budget, but this is to give you a preliminary outlook.
Very good. Thank you so much. Ms. Cuthbert.
Oh, thank you. Do you happen to know what our BSA is?
Our BSA is $7,857.86.
Wait a minute. $7,850.
Sorry, that's the budgeted per student. The BSA allocation.
That was
is,
other. If you were going to say seven, I'm going, whoa.
I know. It's $4,587.40. And it's up $214.49 from the third calc. However, that's before all the adjustments that occur for the endowment scholarships.
And what do you happen to know what our DCD is this year?
Yes. Nobody likes to talk about the DCD, but the DCD went down. It's now 0.9639, which is a decrease of 0.9639, which is a decrease of 0.0025 from the third calc of last year.
Very much. Those are always the most significant numbers. So I prefer the 7,000 one before, so I appreciate it very much. And so when you come back, you'll in next month, in June, these will all be worked out a little bit more with more detail.
Actually, this will be updated in July, so when I come back for the July workshop. Really, June will be more focused on the other funds, the capital funds, and we'll be tweaking our numbers. With the emergency relief funds, there are a lot of moving parts and pieces to our budget. As I think you may or may not be aware, like a month ago, we got notification that they might be pulling back some of the ESSER funds, so we have teams of people really working on how we can pivot and utilize those funds, because although they're saying they'll pull them back and give them back, we don't know when, and we want to make sure we utilize every penny that we can. So,
two more things, Mr. Chair, and I'll be finished. As we go towards our our negotiation seasons, we all would like to know what our 80% of our instructional funding is, what kind of anywhere additional funds are going to go into the general funding sources, because that's where all the raises or lack of raises come from.
Right, right.
And also, when we get to that point, I would like to know how the impact, the price increase of the $1.50 an hour for AFSCME employees, how that is working out.
Okay.
What kind of bottom line impact is that on our information? And there was one more. I'll remember probably after Ms. Haynes speaks, but I'll come back to it.
Okay,
but
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Haynes.
Thank you. So I'll go ahead and piggyback off of the $15 an hour piece. I'll start there that Ms. Cuthbert was talking about. So what I'm wanting to know is a breakdown by each of the different areas, where we are now with how many employees, say how many bus drivers, bus attendants, OS1, OS2, paras, whether they're para 1, 2, or para 2, 3, 4, how many employees we have currently that are still under the $15 per hour. and what is the dollar amount that we're going to need to get anyone that's under there up to 15, along with if there are those that are close, you know, like they may be at 1475. Well, yes, we're going to get them to 15, but we're going to have to do better than that. So I would like to see some form of projection on how many employees we're looking at in those categories and what it's going to take. Because, yes, we know that the money has been set aside still for the teacher piece, but there was not a pot of money set aside for everyone else. So I'm all for doing that, but in a way it's kind of an unfunded mandate because it's kind of like, okay, you have to still find it, though, out of general funds. So I think that's a top priority. I say this every year, and I'm going to say it again. So, Mr. West, I need you to listen. I need this is Jamie personally. I need us to staff our classrooms first and foremost. You know, we say that that's what we're going to do, and then we seem to end up at some point during the year where our classrooms aren't staffed, and we're doing, you know, sub-arenas. And that's not beneficial for our students. And we fortunately this year have some individuals that came back, and they're filling in the capacity of being a long-term sub, and they're doing a good job. But our first priority before we staff anything, and that's kind of what can, you know, like when I look at the additional positions being handed out, I'm not so worried about a core position because if a principal made a good argument for why they needed that additional core position, they know what they're doing and what they need. But every person that we fund that is not in a classroom, that's where I think we've got to start taking a long, hard look. Because when I look at your slide here where, you know, it's like, okay, because we have ESSER, we're going to be okay until we hit fiscal year 26 and the bottom falls out. And this is what I've been saying. You know, I don't know. I mean, some of us were here when we hit the recession and then, so to speak, the bottom fell out. And we pink slipped at that point every teacher that was under 3 years. Experience. I don't want to do that again. I don't want the bottom to fall out. So I'm speaking from myself and none of the other board members. I want classrooms staffed first, but it needs to be a valid classroom position. So, you know, we need to look at the formulas. There are reasons why sometimes we step outside the formulas, and I do support that because it can be a year where it's simply, say we're in a multi-VE classroom and we have a child that has a lot more needs that have to be met and we have to fulfill those needs. But I want classrooms filled first. You know, and Mr. Persis and Ms. Cuthbert were here with me when we went from years ago having a lot of leadership on campuses. Then we swung the pendulum and we made a principal cover 2 schools. I am not forever going back to a principal covering 2 schools. That was crazy, okay? But now it seems like we've gone from that extreme and we've come all the way back over here. And yes, we've got a principal at every, you know, school, which I support. But then we may have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 APs. We may have TOAs. And how many of them? And all of those people are not in classrooms. And yes, there's a need for them, especially with like what's happening with behaviors and things like that. But, you know, we also at one point, I was here when we whittled down the district staff. I remember Archie Gallen saying, even though he was over federal programs and grants, he said, general fund has to take a 10% reduction at the district. So we're going to take a 10% reduction with federal funds. And because we're going to mirror what the district's doing. Well, we whittled down, and now I feel like we've gone back up. And that is, and whether we want to believe it or not, that is the perception out there, is that we are very top-heavy. And so moving into a new season that we're moving into right now, I think we need to take a long, hard look at that. And because our first priority is children, and we're here to ensure that they have a teacher. And that they have a bus driver to drive the bus, and they have a meal when they're on campus. And so I need to know all of that. And if they're going to pull back semester funds, or you say you're hearing that, I need to know that piece, because I don't want anyone sitting here in 26 and the bottom falls out. We're not being financially and fiscally responsible if we don't already have a plan. I hear we've used this money for people, and you know how I felt about that from day one. This wasn't supposed to be for reoccurring positions or whatever. But we just can't sit here and say that's what's going to happen, and we don't put a plan in place to ensure that that doesn't happen. And so I'm looking forward to additional information. And then my final piece is on the teacher piece. Now that we've made it to 47.5, and this is what I talked about with all of our legislators while I was in Tallahassee, prior to going to Tallahassee and since I've been home, I wanted the flexibility to remain. And it's time now that we start with our most experienced teachers and we bring their salary up. And I know that this is not going to be liked by everybody that's at 47.5, but we went from 39.2 to 47.5 in 3 years, okay? And at the expense of our teachers that have been here and they have put the time in. So we need to go ahead and, like, we don't wait till the last minute. Let's go ahead and come up with some kind of a scale or a chart where we're going to take those people with the most experience and work at pushing them up so that we can do away with that compression piece. And listen, I appreciate everybody that's at the 47.5, but they're going to have to experience a little bit of what's happened for the group that's been left out on top so that we can move forward with that. And we need to be proactive, like sit down already and run the numbers and know who's there and know what it's going to look like so that when you go to the bargaining table, we're presenting a true picture of what we can do. Because the one thing I hate, you know, and for those of you left here with the insurance, I hated last year when I said to the insurance guy, no, that's not acceptable. You know, but this was like their best offer, they told us. Then they went back and came back a week and a half later and said, oh, here we have a better offer. Well, let's come with our truly best offer and let's show that we have some honor and respect and care for what everybody's doing. Because this is a hard job and it's really been hard this year coming out of this pandemic because behaviors, in my opinion, on campuses are out of control. And so we need to come. We don't need to play games with this. I'm not a game. I can play a game, but I'm tired of playing games with this kind of stuff. So that's where I stand. And like I said, I'm only speaking for myself, not anybody else. But let's see what we can do with the money and get ourselves out of trouble. I don't want to drop to a negative 24% ratio in 26 or before then if they take the money away. We can't be sitting here thinking this money is going to be the savior. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert.
I remember Norwood. Thank you for inspiring me. I just have two quick, and hopefully this will be addressed in June. What is the budget going to be of each department? Like technology and facilities. I'm sure that will be, but that's what I'm looking forward to. And also, each year, I believe in the past, our departments have been able to say, this is what we would like, this is what we have to have, and this is a pipe dream. Are we going to do that as well with each of the departments?
The approach that we've decided to take is that initially we're going to have the departments work within the available revenues so that they have time to actually formulate a plan within that revenue. And then if they do have needs that just can't be met with that, then they will come forward and request that. But normally, you know, the budget process sometimes is show us all of your needs, and then in July when the rubber meets the road and the revenues meet the expenditures, they're cutting without really any ability to think through that. So we're doing it a little bit backwards in that they put a plan together with the available revenues, and then we see what they need on top of that.
I just always remember the claw truck that facilities needed in order to trim. That's what we did last year, to trim the very high palm trees. When I'm school campuses, that's the first thing I look for, are the trees trimmed? And I know Indian River could be trimmed. I know that Spruce Creek Elementary could be trimmed because with all the wind, especially days like today, it's always a danger. So I always wonder how the clock, that claw truck that we graciously gave the department, how that's being utilized. So, and I know it probably is. It's just, it's weird how we go onto our campuses and we know what we approve of and we're kind of looking. So, but that's a conversation I can have with facilities. But thank you. I just wanted to give you an example.
Okay.
Of,
thank you.
Of knowing that, then we can kind of keep track of what's happening. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I do appreciate slide number 18. So thank you. That's where the staffing, the salaries over 80% of overall expenses, and the big dollar impacting our expenses is coming up. So thank you for that. And it's nice to know FRS increase isn't as large as it has been in the past, but still, it's still, I still can't get over how much we have to give away, especially when teachers are giving 3% of their salaries.
Right.
Also to
FRS. Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you for the individual call and talk and presentation. And I was able to ask all my questions to you there. Thank you.
Thank you. And so I want to echo as a budget priority what Jamie said about staffing the classrooms. I know that would seem like a given. Fortunately, every year we struggle, and I don't know what the magic formula is for that. I don't know where we are too many of this and not enough of that. I won't even pretend that I know that, but I will echo as a priority and out of my own that we staff our classrooms, that we look at those ratios. If we know that we have this many vacancies, at a certain point, then at some point we need to say, you know, what are the positions that can meet the criteria of that classroom position and make a determination on whether or not the district can do without. I don't know how much more simpler to say that. Again, you all know the moving parts of that a lot more than I do. I just have one question. So does this mean that we will have a balanced budget?
Yes, we will have a balanced budget.
So for the first time, and as far as I can remember, you know, and some folks may say, well, it's because of the ESSER dollars. Well, the ESSER dollars are there for a purpose. It's to meet the needs of our students because of the learning loss due to the pandemic. So, you know, the needs are greater, and you know, the reality is that, you know, we have to spend the money. But I am glad to hear, because last year when we got to a certain point, we had not received the ESSER $3, and we were looking at, we knew it was coming, but we couldn't account for the money we didn't have. And so there was a number, I don't know, $30, $40 million where we said, we don't know how we're going to do this. But, you know, thankfully the ESSER dollars did come through. And so I am glad to hear that for the first time, as far as I can remember, we're not talking about a deficit. And that is a plus. And I do have an appreciation for the fact that we're looking that far out as far as ensuring that we're not only making good decisions today, but also making good decisions for tomorrow. So, again, thank you for that. Ms. Cuthbert.
I have one more comment. And to expand on what Mr. Haynes said, and it's just not instructional staff that we have to get rid of the compression, but it's paras and office specialists and mechanics, all of our, because if we go to 15 and we're paying paras $13.50, they have to come up, and who's already put in 10 years making 15? So it's that's extremely, extremely important across the board, and it is a challenge for all of you. So I appreciate your good work. Sometimes I hear at 2 a.m. when I get up, I go, I can hear the calculating going on. So
yeah, we've actually already started with VUE instructional and VUE support in working on those compression issues.
And I think that's a huge issue for all of us, the compression. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Anyone else have any thoughts, feelings, or concerns? Hearing none, it is 2:50, and this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.